Now, more Omaha Sports Insider. Live from the Couple Chevrolet GMC studios, here are Joe Quinn and Nick Handley.
Well, the Arizona Cardinals have made it official.
Now, explain.
The Cardinals.
You just called them the Cardinals.
The
Card. How would you spell that?
K-A-R-D-N-U-L. No, N-I-L-S. It would be great. N-U-L-S.
Most of you would say, Joe.
It's not how you spell
Cardinals. Where's the K coming from?
It's not supposed to be how you spell Cardinals.
You know, the think tank behind the Arizona Cardinals social media has come up with a really clever twist to change the C to a K to welcome Cliff, who has entered the nest.
I'm,
Sweet.
Nick, I'm a big Cliff Kingsbury guy. Let's put it like that. I thought that perhaps getting fired by his alma mater was a little harsh, considering how tough it is to win in Lubbock. They certainly put enough points on the board. He's an offensive guy. I'm not sure that you can blame him entirely for that team's defensive shortcomings. Okay? Tech scores a lot. They can't defend to save their lives. That's a going back to the Mike Leach days. So on, so forth, et cetera, et cetera. I don't mind Kingsbury as coach. I'm not sure making the jump from getting fired at your alma mater to NFL head coach in a locker room with a lot of young players when you have zero credibility, I'm not sure that that's a recipe for success, especially a team that's as bad as the Arizona Cardinals.
So the Cardinals do play the Browns this year, and the Cliff Kingsbury, Baker Mayfield. Now, we know Baker has no problem staring down coaches that he felt that they, you know, maybe did him wrong. And he did release Baker Mayfield, did not give him the scholarship that apparently was originally promised. I'm not exactly sure on the details of that departure, but I know Baker Mayfield is not a fan of Cliff Kingsbury. So if you thought the Hugh Jackson Baker Mayfield saga and the stare down by Baker Mayfield to show him who's boss, well, it might even get better in 2019.
Yeah, I mean, do we know, does Baker Mayfield like hold a personal grudge towards Cliff Kingsbury, or is it more Texas Tech, or is this just kind of one of those, it adds to the legend if we all say that he got screwed by Texas
Tech? I think he just uses anything to use the proverbial chip on the shoulder. That proverbial just cinder block that resides right there on the shoulders of Baker Mayfield, because that fuels him, because that's what real champions do.
Can you also clarify for me, was Patrick Mahomes not the starting quarterback at Texas Tech when this all went down? He ended up being pretty good, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
they made an okay decision there.
I don't know. We'll see.
Okay, let's.
I remain scared.
Let's ask this now. The sample size is smaller for Baker Mayfield. And I get it. They're in different systems in one program. One organization's in transition, the other isn't. But who do you think is going to be the better NFL quarterback? Patrick Mahomes or Baker Mayfield? I'm going to take Patrick Mahomes.
I'm going to say Patrick Mahomes.
Every day of the week.
100 times out of 100. Not that Baker Mayfield doesn't have a bright future, but in terms of what we've already seen this year with both guys getting essentially 1 year of experience. Even Patrick Mahomes played about one game at the end of last season or whatnot. I mean, the evidence stacks up extremely well in Patrick Mahomes' favor right now. Now, let's see what the
Blitz... Did Baker come in week four?
I want to say week four.
Something like that.
Week five, because they screwed around with Tyrod Taylor, or Tyrod Taylor,
Yeah.
Was it Tyrod?
2018 was Tyrod.
Tyrod Taylor. So they screwed around with him for what? A couple weeks, and then he got hurt, and they brought in, was Josh McDaniels? Not Josh McDaniels. Josh McCown starter for like a week.
What was the...
No, he was with the Jets. Was he with the Jets?
It was a Thursday night game against the Jets.
Oh, it was a Thursday night game. Okay, I knew it was a
Tyrod Taylor got hurt, and they brought in Baker.
Okay. Yeah, because McCown's with the Jets.
Okay, so answer this. Of the two NFL coaching hires that have fallen so far, there are 8 head coaching vacancies. 2 of them have been announced. I read somewhere that the Bucs intend to announce Bruce Arians as their head coach at some point sometime soon. And the Browns apparently appear to be leaning heavily towards Freddie Kitchens at this point with what has kind of transpired.
And Matt LaFleur
has
already been hired.
Matt LaFleur with the Green Bay Packers. And now Cliff Kingsbury with the Arizona Cardinals. Which coaching hire do you like better between those two?
I have no clue about the Matt LaFleur one. So I can't say I like that one the most. I've already said I don't really like the Cliff Kingsbury one. Arians is interesting. I think he comes in with credibility. I mean, when he stepped away, that was more of a health issue. So, I mean, maybe by default, I would go with Arians.
I don't think that, is that official yet? I don't even know that that's official.
No, no. I mean, but if we're
talking
if we're
of
assuming,
the two, no, let's not assume.
Oh, just
let's
just
the two of the flu. Because I mean, look, Bruce Arians, he's been a head coach at the NFL level, has won a few games. Would you like LeFleur or Cliff Kingsbury leading the Chicago Bears if Matt Nagy were to suddenly vaporize from this earth?
I just don't know enough. I would not like Cliff Kingsbury, so I would have to go default Matt LeFleur. By the way, can we start calling Mike Zimmer Matt Zimmer so every coach in the NFC is named Matt?
Yeah, well, you'd be getting close.
Let's just call Mike Zimmer Matt Zimmer. I would just probably go default Matt LaFleur because, I mean, he was heavily praised with his role as OC with the Rams 2 years ago. Kind of an underwhelming season with Mariota and the Titans this year. I mean, I'm not going to say that's all LaFleur's fault. So, and the guy played for the Omaha Beef, so why not? Matt LaFleur, sure.
I don't really like either hire, Nick, and here's why. I don't know what kind of respect Cliff Kingsbury is going to get.
I don't either.
In Arizona. And I feel like Josh Rosen, look, what we know of him from his college days, working with Jim Mora, what Jim Mora has said about him since then, and a really rough year one in Arizona, where admittedly that team didn't have a lot of direction. He seems to be a guy who kind of needs a strong authority figure at this point. Maybe Kingsbury can be that guy. Maybe he's got us all fooled just because of the persona that he gives off. Never got the vibe at Texas Tech that that was like a high discipline operation. And right. Kingsbury is just, he has no cred in the league, Nick, because he never played and he hasn't really been a coach in the league. I mean, maybe Pat Mahomes comes out and says, you know, makes this big public statement and says, hey, man, Cliff Kingsbury was, I mean, that's my guy. He's my inspiration for playing well. Everybody should respect him. And maybe that helps. But going to a locker room full of pros when you have very little contact, very little touch with the NFL, we saw guys like Nick Saban try and do that, Nick, and have very limited success. So I don't know what kind of luck Cliff Kingsbury is going to have. LaFleur, I think the Packers screwed up here. I mean, I don't even know anything about him. Maybe he ends up being a great NFL coach. Nick, I think that that offense in Green Bay with Aaron Rodgers kind of running things, helming things, if you will.
Well, yeah, Aaron Rodgers, your offense coordinator.
I think they would have been fine on offense with bringing in an OC that he could work with and going defense-oriented head coach. I know that's, right now in the NFL, that is like the farthest thing from the hip deal. It's like everybody's got to have this young, innovative, offensive mind who are basically all Mike Leach guys that just, you know, they've got all this these unique ideas about how to run offense. Like everybody's looking for Lincoln Riley, but they can't seem to pry Lincoln Riley out of Oklahoma. That's kind of like what it feels like to me. I don't feel like Green Bay needed to do that. That is what they did, especially in that division, Nick, which is still kind of a black and blue division. I mean, the Vikings are a defense-first team.
Yeah, it's an identity for them.
The Bears are a defense-first team. The Packers have always kind of leaned offense, but I feel like there was an opportunity there that if your offense is going to be good enough to compete, why not try and go defense there, become a little bit more balanced? And then Detroit, I don't even know what Detroit wants to do at this point. I mean, I'm so confused about the identity of that organization that, who knows?
I think they want to be a defensive-minded team, given their head coach, Matt Patricia, but
it's kind of odd considering Matt Stafford's your quarterback.
You've got to I have no problem saying that Matt Stafford is still one of the best quarterbacks in that division. He's number two behind Aaron Rodgers. I still have zero problem saying that. Yeah, it's going to be interesting because I don't want to say that I was over the moon excited when Chicago got Matt Nagy last year. I like the offense that Kansas City was running. I thought the fact that Alex Smith had one of his most productive seasons with Matt Nagy's tutelage, the fact that he was a quarterback's coach, then an OC, then started calling plays, I thought that was great, but I thought the sample size was so small. It turned out to be a very good year for Matt Nagy, and I think what he just brought from a culture standpoint, I mean, we can say what we will about the development of that offense and more importantly, Mitch Trubisky, and I think that remains to be seen on where Mitch goes next year. I think that's going to be even a bigger sort of sign of the offense and the relationship, because I think Matt Nagy, there is so much care, and I think that relationship is as strong as you're going to see in the NFL between Nagy and Trubisky. I mean, there's a lot of trust there. Will Mitch take the step next year? We'll see. So he was kind of coming off of a high note. So it was interesting, I thought, and I figured if they can still keep Vic Fangio, then that's fine, because Mitch Trubisky needs somebody that can help develop him. Mitch Trubisky needs someone that he can trust. And that was not going to be the case with Dow Loggins. And that was definitely not going to be the case with John Fox as the head coach. For the Packers, Aaron Rodgers doesn't necessarily need, well, doesn't necessarily, he doesn't need somebody to develop him. Now, the one issue, though, that Aaron Rodgers had with the offense was he did not like the play calling. He did not like some of the positions that Mike McCarthy, who did call the plays, was putting the Packers and Aaron Rodgers in. So then you had Joe Philbin, who was calling the plays once he got fired, and it still wasn't that much better. I mean, the fact that they got just smoked by the Lions at Lambeau Field, and Rodgers gets concussed, not a good way to end things. So can LaFleur have that same sort of McVay, Matt Nagy effect? I mean, it's possible. I just think he's coming into the situation from a different standpoint, or at least his stock. Let's go that way. His stock maybe isn't as high as what McVay's was or even what Matt Nagy's was. Doesn't mean it can't work, but yeah, I will admit I'm a little surprised on that because the reason McVay went to the Rams was to develop Jared Goff, to put him in a system that McVay was going to orchestrate and to mold Goff into that system. Okay, that worked well. Matt Nagy, same thing. To put Trubisky to be able to utilize his skill set, put him in a system that would allow him to flourish. Okay, he did just fine. I mean, the improvement from year one to year two was definitely there with Mitch Trubisky. You're bringing in a coach, in most occasions, like Matt LaFleur, as if Aaron Rodgers was going to be retiring in 2 years, and you're trying to mold a new quarterback. That's not the case. So that's the only confusing thing. But yeah. The offense definitely did lack creativity, so maybe more than anything, Matt LaFleur can help with that creativity. You don't need to develop a quarterback like Aaron Rodgers, but maybe it's more of just getting on the same page as far as what works. That might be it.
This is Derek in Omaha. What's going on, Derek?
That was it right there. That's exactly what I was going to say. I think Mike McCarthy, just his offense was not modernized, and especially where the NFL is going, I mean – I was a bit nervous about this hire, but the more I kind of looked up about who he's been under and who's kind of been mentoring him, I'm confident. The run game, I know that he didn't really get the run game going very good in Tennessee, and we don't have a Derrick Henry either. So we'll see. I feel confident about it, and I think Aaron Rodgers just needs somebody to kind of keep him level, and he doesn't. I don't think he wants to do everything like he has been. And I think that showed the last year and a half, a lot of frustration. But I was hanging up listening to you guys.
Appreciate the call, Derek. And look, it could very well end up panning out that way. And I understand he worked with Matt Ryan during his MVP season. He worked under Sean McVay, helped, mm-hmm. Get Jared Goff revitalized. But,
he led Omaha beef to glory. I don't even know what he did.
It's a very rapid ascent, and you look at his record as OC at Tennessee this year, Nick, and it's not like the numbers in Tennessee blew you off the page. I mean, mm-hmm. I understand, Marcus Mariota is not Aaron Rodgers. Okay, I understand that. But when I think about the year that Matt Ryan was MVP, I mean, Kyle Shanahan got a lot of credit for how good that offense was because of the schemes. Okay, same with the LA Rams and Jared Goff getting better. Is you want to give McVay credit or do you want to give Matt LaFleur credit for all of that? I mean, you can share the credit, sure, but I don't know. Me personally, and I'm not a Packers fan, I have no skin in this particular game, I think whoever they brought in as their offensive coordinator and offensive guy, you could have done that with an OC that could work well with Aaron Rodgers, and that side of the ball would have taken care of itself. This is the one organization I thought didn't need to go out and hire that young, hot offensive mind and could have gone defense, a little more old school, might have been better for the identity of that team. But then again, We'll see. I don't know enough about Matt LaFleur ultimately to say that it's not going to work, but it doesn't strike me as this immediate home run type thing either.
If Aaron Rodgers was in his final season and they had drafted a younger quarterback, it would totally make sense. It totally would. But the other part of the McVays and the Nagys are the creativity that they bring to offense, and that was something that definitely was lacking with the Packers. And Derek is right. Being able to utilize their run game more. And I don't know if that means I'm sorry, I'm not really well versed on what Matt LaFleur runs. I don't know if he's like a McVay, Nagy, RPO type guy. I'm not sure if that's his thing. I know that Aaron Rodgers could pull that off because Aaron Rodgers is an athlete. He's a tremendous athlete. He's gifted with a strong arm and accuracy, but he can run, he can move. But you know, he's taken some shots. His legs haven't been all that healthy recently. He had that really weird calf injury a few years ago. And then, of course, this year he was kind of battling that knee injury that he suffered in the first half of the Bears game. So I don't know how much of that you want him to be a part of. So I'm going to just plead ignorance here. I'm not sure if he's an RPO type guy, but I do think the biggest gripe from Aaron Rodgers and this offense collectively was the lack of creativity. You know, you do have guys like Davante Adams and Randall Cobb. And don't forget, I mean, they had Jimmy Graham. And isn't it crazy? For an organization that used to utilize the tight end better than most, they have marched in so many different tight ends, and none of them have worked. I thought as a Bears fan, when they got Martellus Bennett, I thought, oh, God. This is going to be tough.
Well,
this is going to be really tough because Martellus Bennett is a big target. Jimmy Graham is Jimmy Graham, since he's left the Saints, has not been the same tight end. He just hasn't. But the tight end position has just been so ineffective in Green Bay. Really got to go back to when JerMichael Finley got hurt.
Yeah, I was going to say, the JerMichael Finley just horrific head-to-head hit that he took. That was kind of the end of the tight end production,
yeah,
I felt like, in
they
Green
brought
Bay.
In so many guys. And real quickly, too, on the Green Bay front, interesting. Mike McCarthy, who you thought, okay, could maybe be a decent fit in Cleveland. Maybe you thought he wouldn't be, and I didn't. Is reportedly not a consideration for the Browns. I guarantee you that has everything to do with Baker Mayfield and what we just talked about with Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers having that beef with Mike McCarthy and the lack of creativity offensively. Baker Mayfield needs to be in a creative offense as well. Mike McCarthy would be the last guy you'd want.
Agree. All right. We are going to chat with Bob Mancuso of the Outland Trophy coming up next. That dinner awards dinner, for the Outland Trophy is actually tomorrow night. Bob will give you the full rundown, who the winner is, tell you a little bit of the backstory on the Outland coming up next on AM 590.
ESPN tomorrow.
This is Omaha Sports Insider, online and on air. On air. OSI, your sports source, powered by KMTV and AM 590 ESPN Omaha.
So as Joe mentioned, the Outland Trophy dinner taking place tomorrow night downtown Omaha. Excited about this event every year. It's a sold-out event, I believe. We're going to bring in Bob Mancuso with the Outland Trophy dinner and the Outland Trophy banquet. Bob, is this sold out, or are there any tickets available?
No, it is sold out.
Okay.
So right. We're at the Outland Trophy. It's the 22nd annual year here in Omaha, Nebraska. It's now presented by Werner Enterprises, so we're really excited. But it is sold out for the first time in a while. We're at about 850. We'll be coming to the actual dinner tomorrow evening, which is Wednesday evening, January 9th. And it's sold out this year. We just have had great response. And so hopefully what we do is tell some of those people, you know, many of them are Husker fans because they know Frank Solich is going to be there. We've got the Husker Senior Awards. But every year there's a Husker flavor. So if some of these people are Husker fans, they should contact us, get us their name and email and stuff so that way we can get them on the list for next year. Because there's always a Husker flavor. We award the 3 Husker Senior Awards, which this year is going to Ozigbo, Stanley Morgan, and Stoltenberg. And then there's always the Tom Osborne Legacy Award that goes as the nationwide award. And then we have the Outland Trophy winner, and usually a couple other things are happening. So in the future, if they want to get on our list to get tickets or to get interested, just to contact us, and we'll get them on the list for next year.
Bob Mancuso, of course, with the Outland Trophy, their award dinner award presentation is tomorrow night here in Omaha. Bob, tell us about Quinnen Williams from Alabama, this year's Outland Trophy winner.
Yes. Oh, man, we're really excited to have him. Now, we know they had a tough game yesterday. You know, the Clemson played really well. And, you know, I think, you know, just talking to Mike Ruth, he's a 1985 Outland winner. We just had a luncheon, and he mentioned, too, that pick 6 kind of turned the tide right away, and it seemed like Alabama was always trying to catch up. And then they did kind of stabilize, but then Clemson broke away again. So, but Quinnen had they were double-teaming him a lot. I think he was credited with at least three tackles, and they were double-teaming him a lot. But he's a great individual. He's 6'4", 300 pounds. He was the Outland Trophy winner. He's only a sophomore. He's a redshirt sophomore. But a lot of people think he's going to come out. They haven't announced it yet, but he's projected as high as some people even say the possible number one pick. So great defensive tackle, nose guard type of guy. Had a great career. He's been, an SEC champion in Alabama with all their awards. You know, he's a unanimous All-American. And team-wise, you know, they've been in the playoffs all the last 4 years, and they've won it twice. So we're excited to have him in Omaha, but he's a great individual. One other interesting stat that some people don't possibly know is he was eighth in the Heisman voting. So, you know, for a lineman to get that much credibility and recognition is really amazing. So he's had a great year, and he's really a great individual. So he'll be in Omaha, comes in today for a couple of the other events that we have with the Outland Trophy.
Talk with Bob Mancuso. The event tomorrow night, as you mentioned, sold out, but a lot of great things around this. And Bob, when we look at the Outland Trophy and just what it kind of represents, it's you mentioned some of the Nebraska Senior Awards, the Tom Osborne Legacy Award going to Frank Solich, and just kind of the night itself, very festive night. And I know you guys are always kind of, you know, doing things to keep this thing, you know, really, really one of the top of the line banquets. And when it comes to the College Football Awards, you know, is it something that you guys are continuing to kind of look at how you do things and then, you know, kind of maybe add some things to it each year?
Absolutely. You know, we always want to make it better and keep it fun and make it a great event for the people, you know, in Omaha, especially in the Midwest, to come to and look forward to it each year. And we're really excited the Greater Omaha Sports Committee can help bring it to Omaha and be the national host of a major award. The Outland Trophy is the third oldest award in college football. So it's got definitely credibility. It's a member of all the awards that are given out at the ESPN Awards show. And the Outland is right there. So we added that Tom Osborne Legacy Award. This year will be the fifth annual that is going to Frank Solich. And when you look at Frank Solich's career, I mean, we know him because he's our former Nebraska coach. And, you know, he's a former Home Depot Coach of the Year in 1999, two-time Big 12 Coach of the Year, 99 and 2001. He also went on, he was the MAC Coach of the Year in 2006. But he's had a great career at Ohio. Their last 10 teams have all been bowl eligible. So that's 10 years in a row. He just completed his 14th year at Ohio. And for Nebraska fans, you know, we've got Scott Frost back, and you know, he's starting to get things reestablished and had a little tougher first year than some people would like, but he's starting to get things happening and getting recruiting going. But our last Big 12 championship for Nebraska was 1999, and that was Coach Solich. So we're glad to have him back. This will be the fifth annual Tom Osborne Legacy Award. And in the past, we've honored such people as like Barry Switzer from Oklahoma, who coached a couple of the Outland Trophy winners. And then also last year was Bobby Bowden, Florida State, who had a great career and great coach at Florida State.
Yeah, how tough was it to convince Frank to come back for this award, Bob? Were you involved in that conversation at all?
Absolutely, and it was just an honor to be involved. But, you know, it's the Tom Osborne Legacy Award, so we talk with Tom, you know, each year and take it to the committee that we have for the Tom Osborne Legacy Award committee. And Tom really felt it was time, you know, with Scott getting hired back at Nebraska and the great career that Frank has had, to maybe bring him back. And, you know, at first, you know, like they talked about, you know, in the paper a little bit, you know, Frank was a little bit tentative to be sure that, you know, that he should come back and was the time right. And Tom convinced him and talked to him and said, yeah, it's a great time to come back. You know, we're trying to rebuild. And Scott, you know, was a player under Coach Solich and Coach Osborne. So he really also, you know, would be looking forward to it. So Scott will be there at the banquet also. But Solich, you know, the other thing that some people forget about Solich and just his career is his playing days. You know, he was from Pennsylvania. He was born in Pennsylvania, but he grew up and went to high school in Cleveland. And so that's why kind of Ohio has a soft spot for him, you know, when he went back to Ohio. But he was part of Bob Devaney's first freshman class. And during his 4 years, Nebraska's record was 9-2, 10-1, 9-2, and 10-1. His fourth year, his senior year, of course, he was All-American. Nebraska was 10-0, ranked number one. And in the bowl game, they played Alabama and Bear Bryant. So if Devaney's first team wins that game, with Frank as the key player and a captain in 1965, Nebraska would have won the national title. And, you know, instead Alabama did beat them. And so Alabama, I believe, was ended up number one that year. But those 4 years, Devaney started to lay the foundation for what then Nebraska did come out and won in 70-71. So Frank had a great playing career too. And was really, they had four great years to start the Husker tradition.
Bob Mancuso joining us as we are discussing the Outland Trophy Dinner. That takes place tomorrow night downtown Omaha. It's presented by the National Foundation for Infectious Diseases, hashtag Fight Flu. Always a great, great banquet. They will honor Alabama's Quinnen Williams. Also, the Tom Osborne Legacy Award. We'll see Frank Solich there, Nebraska Senior Award winners. It's a very special night. Really looking forward to hearing more about this as the night transpires. Bob, really appreciate your time, your effort, and join us. I know you're very busy today, but we look forward to hearing about how great this event was yet again.
Yes, thank you so much. And also wanted to thank Werner Enterprises, as they're the presenting sponsor of the actual banquet right here in Omaha, the Werner Award Dinner, as part of the Outland Trophy. So thank you to Werner Enterprises, their president, Derek Leathers, and one of their community VP people, Fred Thayer. They do a great job at Werner and just a great company, and we're really glad that they're involved and help us bring this to Omaha, right here in Omaha, Nebraska, the Outland Trophy Werner Award Dinner.
Thank you very much, Bob. We'll talk to you soon, all right?
All right. Thank you. Have a great one.
You too, sir. All right, so to come in this 4 o'clock hour, I do have some time for your calls coming up. More reaction to Alabama-Clemson last night. Also, we're going to get to the rehab report. Travis Manners of Athletes Training Center. Got a couple of basketball injuries. Jacob Epperson done for the year for Creighton. Give you the rundown on what the future looks like for him. And then Azabuke also out for the rest of the season for the Kansas Jayhawks. So a couple things to talk about there. That's coming up in about 15 minutes or so here on AM 590.
Yes, beat them all.
Tell us why we're wrong, or pump up our ego and just agree with us. The AM 590 inbox is open on Twitter at AM 590 ESPN Radio, or send an email to OSI at AM590ESPNRadio.com. You're listening to Omaha Sports Insider on AM 590 ESPN Omaha.
All right, question for you, Nick. This is a Twitter question. Do you follow Emily Knorr from the Omaha World Herald on Twitter?
I'm about to sneeze. Hold on.
Okay. Three. Go ahead. I'll turn your mic off. You can sneeze.
Can't do it.
Can't do it?
Can't do it. I lost it. Gosh, that's the worst feeling.
TJ, you went to school with Emily Knorr, did you not?
That is correct.
All right. The reason
she's with the World Herald?
She's with the World Herald. Right. She's their, I think, city council reporter. The only reason I really enjoy following her, every Tuesday is liquor license approval time.
Okay, what strip club is trying to get a liquor license today?
Well, that's just it. So half of them are strip clubs that are trying to get liquor licenses, or the other half of the time is a great way to see, like, what bar might be coming to your neighborhood sometime soon. And there's one, like, I guess just around the corner from where I live. It's applying for a liquor license today. So, hey, I'm always good for
a
new little local
place.
I don't... in the middle of Elkhorn at 204th and Dodge? I don't think so.
Well, isn't there, like, a dude that's, like, just trying to throw strip clubs all over the place and
just keeps getting shut down? Hold on. There was the guy, and I can't think of who it was. He owned a strip joint of
some sort. A gentleman's club.
And he applied for a liquor license at this place they were going to call, like, was it the Playhouse? No, the Playhouse is the place down in Lincoln.
Playhouse is the...
I know what it was called. It was called Candyland. It was going to be a bikini bar.
And that sounds creepy.
I know,
man.
But it was like, I think it was in the vicinity of like 72nd and Blondo.
Okay, yeah, it was the old Mai Tai. Yeah, yeah.
And they were going to try and put this place called the Candyland in there. And I guess he even offered to like rename the joint, but the idea was it was a bikini bar, they were going to be open for lunch, and the people, there was like a school nearby and a church, and it's like in the middle of a neighborhood, and the people all showed up and are like, wait a second.
It's going to have a great buffet, though. The buffet's at the gentleman's establishment.
Well, and I'm kind of like 50-50 on this, okay, because look, part of it is, do you want to, like, protect your neighborhoods and schools and stuff? Yeah, but at the same time, like, if it's zoned, like, residential, I mean, this guy, it's not like a strip club. It's a bikini bar.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we have Hooters restaurants and Twin Peaks and places like that. Are we really going to stand in the way of this guy trying to make a buck? I don't know. I'm kind of torn.
It's the American dream. Who
doesn't want to own their own establishment where you hire a bunch of people to wear swimsuits to work?
Yeah.
And you can go and enjoy, you know, an adult beverage or 10
and
over your lunch hour.
Yeah.
I didn't even know that they were going to have dancing.
They just walk around and serve your food.
Well, you know what I mean? Do they dance at some of those other places? No.
No. Yeah, I'm assuming it's a dance club, like a gentleman's club. They just, they're, you know, covered. You know, the top's covered, the bottom's covered.
Okay,
bikini
let's
bar.
See. I can give you the update for today.
I want to know if it's in there. If there's at least another one being proposed.
Okay, so I guess there's a place called the Corner Tap.
Let's just have this. Let's going forward here in 2019, because, you know, we're all about, you know, new things, new traditions. Let's make the 4:30 segment on Tuesdays, Liquor License Tuesday.
I think that this is not bad. I think we do like a little report right before we get to the rehab report with Travis, the Liquor License Report.
Liquor License Tuesday.
So this is coming from Emily Knorr of the World Herald, who covers this kind of thing. She says, yes, original name here, Corner Tap at 204th and Dodge, they get their liquor license.
Way to go. Good job, Corner Tap.
Maybe right there next to, what is it, the Donut Professor? They got like a Jimmy John's and a Starbucks. There's a Menards there. Right
up by 204th and Dodge, is that what you said?
Yeah, 204th and Dodge. Right up there by Indian Creek. But up by Indian Creek and the bowling place, whatever that's called. We used to do our show there.
Oh, The Mark.
The Mark. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, so it's got to be the Corner Tap, apparently. Okay. We do the competition with The Mark.
Good location right up Dodge.
Also, getting a liquor license today, Club Karma, a new dance club planned for 15th and Farnham.
Dope. That's downtown, baby.
He's heard concerns about the club, but the applicant says it's a traditional club featuring local music, not a Candyland-like place.
Oh, it says that?
Yes.
Oh,
it actually
man.
Says that in the tweet.
That is so well-timed.
Damn. I didn't even plan that. That literally just popped up.
So is that going to be like the ultimate reference when trying to win over the liquor board is... Trust me, we're not trying to be a Candyland type operation.
What's wrong with Candyland?
I feel like it gives the board game Candyland a really bad name.
This is America. That game, by the way, took absolutely zero brain power or skill. The only thing involved in that was looking at pretty pictures and drawing cards out of a pile.
Yeah.
Well, and I think part of the problem with Candyland was the fact that it was named after maybe not named after, but board game.
You think of when did you play Candyland? Well, I was a little kid. A kid.
Mm.
And then you're talking about, Bikini Bar. That's, it's borderline best.
That is apparently your liquor license update for
the
moment. If anything else new develops on that front, we will be sure and let you know.
Coming to a neighborhood near you.
Yep. That's, you know what? To be honest with you, that's how I learned like three or four new bars were opening in kind of the Elkhorn area. It was like, somebody applied for liquor license there. I wonder what that's going to be.
That's fantastic.
I just saw, by the way, our friend Darwin from DJ's Dugout just posted a picture. They are opening a new DJ's Dugout in Elkhorn.
Yeah, right across from Indian Creek.
It is literally, Nick, I can see the structure from my back porch. Yeah. So
I remember, I can't remember when I was driving by that. Did they have signs even up during the Pinnacle Bank Championship?
They may have.
I think, yeah.
They're building a hotel there. They're putting in, there's like a bank, a little strip mall with a bunch of little shops. There's a coffee shop going in there, a big old DJ's Dugout.
Cool.
Nick, maybe I'll finally get to realize my lifelong dream of being a townie someplace. My rule is I always wanted to go somewhere I could walk home, though, because I'm too cheap to take cabs or Uber all the time, and I don't believe in drinking and driving.
Finally got my townie bar. Now, we went there on New Year's Eve for a little bit before, you know, just to have a post-dinner drink. And I've realized that it is a bar that on nice days I could walk. It's like maybe four blocks from my home. So that was a great discovery. I've been there now three times. And yeah, I like it. It's kind of a everybody knows your name type establishment too.
We have an update here. Some neighbors in the Elkhorn area don't want the council to re-up a liquor license for Chance Ridge Event Center in the Skyline area. I don't even know where that's at.
I know where Skyline is. I don't know where they are.
I don't know. I have no idea. I mean, seriously, I live in Elkhorn and I have no clue. Citing noise problems.
So Skyline area is kind of between the Maple and Dodge. If you're going between 204th and Maple and Dodge, it's kind of like smack dab in the middle, right before you get to like the old downtown Elkhorn.
Okay, and the old downtown Elkhorn, they got a couple of nice little townie candidates down in that vicinity as well.
They do.
There you go. All right, up next, Travis Manners joins us for the Rehab Report. Going to talk about Jacob Epperson for Creighton. He is done for the year. Also, Azubuike for Kansas, done for the year. So, a couple season enders. We'll talk to Travis about those injuries next on AM 590.
ESPN.
This is Omaha Sports Insider, online and on air. On air. OSI, your sports source, powered by KMTV and AM 590 ESPN Omaha. It's time for the Rehab Report, presented by Athletes Training Center, building and rebuilding today's athletes on AM 590 ESPN Omaha.
Rehab Report, it's always brought to you by Athletes Training Center. Two locations, West Omaha, 138th and Industrial Road, and also Papillion Highway 370 and 84th Street. As we talk to Travis Manners of Athletes Training Center. Travis, we're talking some hoops today. And let's start in Omaha with Creighton. Jacob Epperson, boy, you talk about having a tough season. He has been battling a sort of an unspecified knee ailment, but also it was discovered that he does have a stress fracture in his back, so he is going to miss 2 to 3 months, which will keep him out for the season. Yeah. When you think of stress fracture in the back, especially for someone at 6'10", you know, what are some of the big impact factors with this one?
Well, just his pure size as a 6'10 individual, I think, is a big impact in terms of both his knee and his back. And you look at somebody that has that type of a frame, and you look at his age, and obviously there were some big growth spurts that he's had in his life, and to try to be able to have a nice solid spine from a growth standpoint, he's going to have extra stress on that area. He's going to have more weight, more force that's being generated, and it's you know, it takes the right frame in order to be able to handle that. It takes the right person, the right strength, in order to manage the extra stresses that go along with being his size. Now, at the same time, we see this in folks that aren't his size as well, that are, you know, more of your, I'll call it, average size individual. And so this is not something terribly uncommon in the sport of basketball. It's not uncommon in our youth population in general, to where we see some of these stress fractures that ultimately cost some significant playing time for these individuals.
As far as the knee injury goes, Travis, for Epperson, they have not really specified exactly what it is, but we do know this was the same knee that was surgically repaired last year. He missed time in the offseason. Again, with a guy who's 6'10", 6'11", what does your mind kind of wander to here?
You know, my mind probably wanders to some type of cartilage, you know, with an individual that's had his knee reconstructed already once. You know, it's going to be, what other concomitant things did he have going on at the time of surgery? It's not uncommon for our athletes to have some meniscus issues after having their knee worked on. And so my guess is the fact that they've known about it, he's been kind of trying to work through it for quite some time. It's not something that's probably imperative. It's probably more of a nag, but now that they know that he's going to be laid up for some time with his back, I think they're looking at it as an opportunity to kind of give this young man a clean slate from a physical standpoint, reduce any ailments that he has in this knee that's kind of overlaying, and try to give him an opportunity to rehab both areas concurrently, which a lot of our knee rehab incorporates a lot of core, and a lot of our core rehab incorporates the knee. So to have a healthy knee is probably going to be able, or it's going to be favorable for him in rehabbing his back as well.
You know, when you think of guys, especially, I mean, we talked about the size, but given his age, still a very young man.
Totally.
Is this something that you do kind of, even with the, you know, what's going to keep him out and knowing that he's going to, you know, have to go through physical therapy and everything with this, is this something, though, that you just kind of are concerned that, you know, at times you're just going to have to kind of deal with some back pains? Or do you feel like, you know, once he kind of goes through the necessary treatment that he should be okay for the foreseeable future?
Honestly, it depends on where they caught the stress fracture at from a time standpoint. If they caught it in an early stage, the opportunity for them to shut them down, brace them, and for that area to heal has a higher probability. If they've caught it in a chronic state, to where maybe he's had it for a while and this is an acute flare-up on a chronic issue, then I think his chance of having a pain-free back as he continues his competitive lifespan is going to be challenging for him. I mean, just statistically speaking, it's a very hard area to get feeling good on a day-to-day basis when you have an unhealed stress fracture. If they're shutting him down for a couple months, it's with my understanding they probably caught this thing in an opportunity for it to heal. At least that's what they think they're hoping for medically, and give him the best chance of healing. And sometimes that happens. Sometimes it takes a little bit of a surgery to help have it stabilize as well. So they're doing everything they can to keep this young man out of the OR for his back, which is a good thing, and hopefully he'll be able to heal up from that standpoint and gain some core strength, gain some general strength for his frame, which is going to be the most pivotal thing for him moving forward.
It is the Rehab Report brought to you by Athletes Training Center here on AM 590. Travis Manners, our guest as always. With Jacob Epperson at this point in his young career, Travis, with with big dudes like this that have had, you know, injury problems through their first 2 years, I always worry about them being guys that kind of become injury prone, if you will. Is it premature to slap that label on him, or is that kind of a legitimate worry, do you think, going forward?
I think it's a legitimate worry. I think it's not necessarily a label that you can really put on any player, at least that's you don't hope to. Mm-hmm. Inevitably, not everybody's frame, regardless of how superior of an athlete they are, not everybody's frame can hold up and withstand the rigors of college or professional athletics, and some of our frames can't hold up to high school athletics. And so for this individual to have had already some problems, it's certainly something that is going to be considered. I think for him, you know, anybody his size and anybody with his medical history, you have to really tailor a performance improvement plan, a weight training program, and a kind of a maintenance rehabilitation program very specific for him. And it takes work and it takes compliance by the athlete. And a lot of variables go into it, even outside of those factors alone. And so the cards get a little stacked against you when your body starts to show wear and tear when you're, you know, 18, 19 years old as a sophomore in college. And so for him, I don't necessarily think it's a label he can't beat, but it's certainly something that I think everybody on their team is looking at with a little bit of red flag for him.
Well, and staying with the basketball theme, a big loss for Kansas, a team that was in the Final Four, another team that was expected at the beginning of the season to make another return to the Final Four. They will lose their center, Udoka Azubuike, who will be out for the remainder of the season after an MRI revealed he has torn ligaments in his right hand. He will have surgery early this week. And Travis, when you think of that, a guy that is a righty, when you think of torn ligaments in the hand, what are we looking at here?
Yeah, I mean, I've heard different reports. I've heard ligaments and I've heard tendons, and so it's kind of hard to know exactly what he's dealing with. I know that the injury a couple years ago was kind of an injury where his hand got caught or finger got caught in a jersey, mm-hmm. and kind of pulled, and so you think of kind of a tendon tear that can happen, that a tendon that is responsible for kind of flexing your fingers, kind of jersey finger as we often see it in football. But in this one, it doesn't sound like that was the case. It was kind of a ball that hit him awkwardly or a point of contact. And so not quite sure if it's a thumb ligament or if it's a hand tendon. But regardless, there's some imperative things that we need for function in our hand, whether it be a tendon or ligament, for both stability or power generation or just dexterity. And he obviously sustained this injury of some capacity, which I think is going to be something they just had to do. I don't think any of those things that we typically see are braceable for the sport of basketball specifically. Now, if he was a different sport, different athlete, say an interior lineman for football, might be something that they may be able to tape and brace. But for somebody that needs his hands in a way that a basketball player does, you know, you definitely can't go without certain function. And this young man, it sounds like they tried a few things, but it just didn't work out. He had the history of having the same injury on his left side, so they know inevitably how well the surgery was successful for him in the recovery from that standpoint, as well as how unsuccessful conservative was. And so I think this time they were probably less likely to take more time with it to see if he could rehabilitate through it and just called it a day and opted for the surgery.
Real quickly, too, and this is one that I didn't tell you that we would discuss, but it just popped up. I got to know about this because the Chicago Bears tight end, Trey Burton, missed the game because of a groin injury that crept up Saturday morning. And what he described as his body kind of using his groin tightening up as a defense mechanism with when something might be harming his body. If he's about to suffer an illness, this has happened. Have you ever heard of anything like that? Because it sounded so bizarre.
No, I haven't heard of that. I've certainly heard of muscle cramping and some things that happen when you're in a dehydrated state because of a virus or a bacteria or something like that. But to specifically isolate it to one muscle group, whether it be a groin or a quad or a hamstring, is kind of foreign. I thought actually you were going to the point of maybe you had like a sports hernia or something like that that, you know, was kind of lingering and he just couldn't work through it anymore. But no, when that happens, I'm not sure what they were seeing or what they were kind of diagnosing him with from a general medical condition standpoint. Very odd.
Yeah, he said it had locked up on him, and this is just by his words, this has happened to him before, and what they sort of revealed is just his body trying to protect itself. I don't know what to really make of that.
Yeah, I don't know if, it's hard to know. If he has underlying, like, sickle cell anemia, does he have, a different condition medically that we're just not privy to that he doesn't want to necessarily disclose either. That's kind of giving him that tip to the press in terms of how he describes it. But yeah, there's something else medically going on that obviously the athlete knows and the medical staff knows that it's probably something a little bit odd from what we would normally see in the athletic population medically, but probably something that he might be and for whatever reason, sickle cell kind of comes to mind for individuals that have some of those vague descriptions and descriptions that are a little bit unusual.
Yeah, very, very unusual there. It is our rehab report presented to you by Athletes Training Center. Check them out once again in two locations, West Omaha, 138th and Industrial Road, and also in Papillion, Highway 370 and 84th Street. If you have any questions on any injuries that have been bothering you, well, you can reach out to Travis. Email him, tmanners@athletestrainingcenter.com. Athletes Training Center, building and rebuilding today's athletes. Appreciate it, Travis. Have a great week.
Yeah, great to connect with you guys again. Thanks.
Yep, you bet, sir. Nick, I thought you were going to say that when his groin tightens up, it lets him know that Cody Parkey is going to doink a field goal, and so
his groin
he didn't want to be a part of that nonsense.
He's like, you know what, I can't play. I can't stomach this. Like, it would have been great. No, it wouldn't have been great, but if, like, his groin tightened up as Cody Parkey, because when people have different feelings, like when they have, what's the word I'm looking for? You get arthritis, and all of a sudden
you can feel the rain coming in my bones.
You know, when the weather's changing, maybe like that was Trey Burton's reaction, knowing that Cody Parkey was about to clank another one.
It's the
could be
old, like, theoretical kick between the legs about to get from the city of Chicago and, like, that guy who was screaming after the game into, like, his cell phone.
Oh, boy, my groin tightened up. This isn't good for Cody Parkey.
Somebody call a timeout.
We got to get a different kicker in here. Robbie Gould's in attendance. Bring him down. Bring him down real quickly. Come on.
It's under contract, like, right now. Their season's over,
there
right?
There you go.
It's AM 590.
ESPN Omaha.